Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, sweeping the country minus Chuck Mangione as we get another theme song for this great show, the Doc Talk Podcast, hosted by a brother, a mentor, and a friend in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Dr. Greg Roscoe. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, producing this early in the morning in Los Angeles, minus the Denver omelet, the sourdough toast, and the country potatoes. But that's a story for another day. If you want to chime in with some questions, 347-205-9631. If you want to tell your friends and catch this show later, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, more of him, less of me. Let me lay the red carpet down, put that podium in its place, hand off the mic to Threes. Doc, how are you? How can people get a hold of you? And, boy, you are bringing two great guests through this great show of yours again, my friend.
Well, thank you. You're really charged up today, Mark. You know, we're doing well. You know, we're in our studios in Pittsburgh. You know, the weather here is phenomenal. We're in the 40s. No snow in the forecast. And then, you know, big deal this week is Groundhog Day. That's on Thursday morning. And, you know, Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, the weather capital of the USA. But, you know, get a hold of me, GJRMD308Outlook.com. You know, we're very, very fortunate today to have a superstar, NFL retired, Keith Dorney, knows a lot about what we're going to talk about today. And, you know, I wanted to review a little bit about the concussion protocols, especially with the playoffs coming and then the Super Bowl. You know, with regard to these things, I've had several emails, you know, will the NFL really enforce that on these superstars on these very important games? You know, will they return these guys back to playing if maybe they're not 100%? And Keith is very aware of this. You know, Keith, you've been a star at Penn State, correct? Many, many years ago.
Yes, don't hate me, Pittsburgh, for attending Penn State for 4 years, but yes.
And then, Keith, you went to the NFL.
I did. I was drafted by the Detroit Lions and played my whole nine-year career there.
Wonderful. And, you know, Keith, you're into education today, correct? And
I am.
Writing books, and you've written several books. I think you're in the area of maybe 7 to 8 books that you've written and published.
That's correct, Doc. I'm working on my 7th book right now. You know, I've found here later in life that writing is my passion, so I'm pursuing that passion. I'm able to do that, luckily. I'm enjoying myself. The current book I'm working on, Best Time Retirement, Make Retirement the Best Time of Your Life. So a lot of tips on, you know, improving your whole being, you know, your soul, your connections, your relatives, taking care of your body, all right, as well as the money and estate planning as well.
That has to be a winner. That has to be a winner, sir. You know, Keith, again, just talking in general, my thoughts for today, we're talking about, okay, acutely, you know, what triggers this per concussion protocol in the NFL? I want to kind of talk about that. And then how do we return these guys back to play? And then say behind the scenes, hey, are they really enforcing that because of these playoffs, the importance of the Super Bowl? The other issue I wanted to touch on a little bit was, you know, late sequelae. You know, you've been in the NFL. You've had concussions. You know, what has that done to your life? You know, how have you overcome any damage that you may have had from a concussion, but also from sports injuries? You know, you've had some damage. You've had some reconstructive surgeries. So that overall, it's just not a bowl of cherries playing in the NFL and then walking away one day. Would you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm more than happy to talk about all of those issues.
Wonderful. Well, you know, Keith, what I wanted to do, you know, with regard to, you know, this year, you know, we had the issue with Tua. Tagliavola, you know, that concussion, returning to work, returning to the game, et cetera. And then I believe with Teddy Bridgewater, another issue with that same team. You know, with regard to the protocol, you know, who starts it? You know, what happens? I mean, does the guy get dinged and then walks off and says, hey, I don't feel good? Is someone watching the films to assess the extent of the injury? What happens? You know, who calls the protocol? Who makes those determinations?
Well, you know, first off, Doc, you know, things have changed just this season because of the Tua, so-called Tua incident that you referred to.
Yes,
the NFL midstream, if you will, went ahead and changed the concussion protocol. And let me just, you know, just a brief history lesson here. Yeah, back when I played, there wasn't any concussion protocol. You know, if you got dinged, if you were dizzy, if you got knocked out for a few seconds, if you were seeing stars, that was actually back in my day revered. You know, it was like you're doing your job. You're punishing your opponent. If you're seeing stars, you know what's he seeing, right?
Wow.
You know, it was kind of like, hey, pull up your britches and get back in there. You know, it's going to wear off in a couple of seconds. Now, now we know, of course, that these incidents, you know, in and of themselves, can be extremely, you know, harmful to the person. You know, either immediately thereafter or, you know, later on in life, as you were saying. So I've never been, you know, as far as the NFL goes, as a business, you know, I've never been a big advocate of, you know, of them protecting players.
Okay.
In fact, I don't think they have protected players, you know, over the years as well as they should have. However, with this whole concussion thing, you know, we kind of forget about that with COVID and everything else. But you go back 4 or 5 years, the NFL was actually in crisis because of this whole concussion thing. And because their pocketbooks, you know, were in danger, they made some really, really big changes. And that included having each team appoint a person whose only job, you know, is to look for signs of a concussion. Because the problem is, you know, as a player, when a lot of times you're out there in the heat of the battle, And you get dinged, you're not really aware of it yourself. You know, you may be aware of it, but, you know, you're not admitting it to yourself. I mean, I've gone through it many times, and trust me, you know, it shouldn't be up to the player to decide. And again, the NFL, you know, to their credit, they realized this, and they appointed this special person, you know, that their only job at the game was to look for signs of a concussion. And then if they saw signs of a concussion, to go in, all right, and take action. Now, you had mentioned, well, what about the playoffs? You know, are they going to be more lax?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And that was always my problem with it as well, because, again, this is an official of the team. This is someone who the team went ahead and hired. So after that Tua incident that you referenced
earlier,
they you know, they actually scrapped what I just said, and now supposedly for every game they have this independent, you know, head doctor that's doing the same thing but has no affiliation, you know, with the team. Okay.
Wow.
And supposedly, you know, this skeletal, you know connection to the, you know, to the NFL, since, you know, somebody has to hire them, of course. So there's always going to be a conflict of interest. But so now, you know, does the NFL, is their sphere of influence big enough where, you know, they can influence these people who are, you know, these independent observers of each game? I can't really answer that question, but, you know, I'm leaning, you know, to the side of no, they can't. You know, they can't. And so, you know, I have to hand it to the NFL, you know, as far as concussions go, with this whole scare, you know, that happened, you know, 4 or 5 years ago and you know, it continues to be, a topic of conversation, you know, as far as football is concerned. you know, I gotta laud them. I think they did a great job and are doing a great job. And, you know, so many other things, too, as far as practice restrictions, targeting
yeah.
penalties, et cetera. All of this, you know, is geared towards, you know, trying to have less head trauma yeah. in a game where head trauma is, you know, is pretty much inevitable.
Well, you know, excellent. You know, I think you've touched on many different aspects here. And the NFL, I think, yes, has really stepped up to the plate, trying to improve that. I think we've talked about, you know, the kickoff situation, how they've changed that to avoid
yeah.
people running at high speed into each other, which I think
right,
is excellent.
Right, right. That was a big change.
Yes.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that rules change, I don't think, has impacted our enjoyment of the game.
Yeah, I agree, Doc. I don't think anybody even notices. You know, just to explain it, before, you know, these guys could take a running start basically from anywhere, you know, as
yeah.
long as, you know, they didn't cross the line, you know, where the ball was being kicked from on the kickoff. Then they said, well, you can only run 5 yards, right? They made that change a few years ago. Now, you know, you'll notice they're lined up just about on the same line, you know where the ball is teed up, so they get basically no running start at all anymore. And you know, as you
wow.
alluded to, you know, it was determined that kickoffs were the most dangerous play in football.
Sure.
Why? Because you have two people running at each other full speed, and oftentimes, you know, when you make contact, it's a heck of a collision. So.
Absolutely.
Think that, you know, that's one. The other one related to kickoffs was, you know, making it much easier to have a touchback. And if you recall, the touchback
right.
used to be 20 yards. Now it's on the 25-yard line. So coaches
yeah.
are more, you know, more apt to say, hey, just let the ball go and we'll take it on the 25. Yeah.
And,
so you know, that's, you know, they're
yeah.
lessening the amount of those plays that are happening during the game.
Which
Go ahead, Doc.
With regard to what you're talking about, I think indeed the NFL again has stepped up to the plate, and again trying
they
to
really
take
have.
Those serious issues and maybe lessen the impact. You know, with regard to say that the same situation here, Keith. You know, some of the research we've done talks about. You know, positions on the field that are, you know, really highly potential to get a concussion. And, you know, I mean, as far as some of the play, as far as some of the research we did, you know, they're saying quarterbacks, you know, they're ones that could get a concussion. Then they talk about cornerbacks, wide receivers,
yeah.
linebackers, and then offensive linemen. That seems to be the hierarchy, at least where concussions have occurred, and then they've rated them overall or put them in sequence. Do you find that kind of be true also in your playing
yeah,
days?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And,
you know, I was an offensive lineman. I was an offensive tackle, all right, and back
yes.
in my day, played a little guard as well. And, you know, when you're playing on the offensive line, most of the time there's a guy lined up over you. And, of course, you're colliding every single play. You know, a lot of positions
yeah.
that you mentioned, you know, they don't have a collision every single play. So I think offensive linemen are on that list because of the, you know, the repeated trauma, you know, play after play, you know, usually 64
yeah.
plus plays, you know, in a game.
Yes.
But we're only about a foot from each other, even though, you know, both of us are, you know, 300 pounds plus and muscular
yeah.
and trying to beat
oh,
the
yeah.
crap out of each other. We're colliding, you know, from just a few feet away. All right. So the
yes,
impact
sir.
Is less. Now, as you go up that list to number one, you know, why are our quarterbacks, you know, number one? Well, because they're out in the open field, and their job, all right, is, you know, to not only break up passes, but as everyone knows who watches the game, to, you know, to impact that wide receiver, to make them the next time they're running over the middle, you know, hear footsteps, so to speak, right? So those guys, they're trying to knock the crap out of that wide receiver. Now there are protections. Again, the NFL, you know, back in my day, there were no protections. If you could hit someone, you know, flat on the head, a head-to-head contact, that was considered a very, very good play, and you'd get a pat on the back in the film room, okay?
Now,
even though defensive coordinators and defensive players still want to hurt the receiver, still want to hurt the quarterback, well, they're now limited by the rules, right? We have that targeting rule, all right, where, you know, if you lead with the head, you know, to another person's head, you know, that's now illegal, and you get ejected from the game as well as a 15-yard penalty. Again, that used to be a attaboy, you know, kind of play, if you made it.
Wow.
So I think probably the biggest change, though, and this is, you know, where a lot of fans don't realize, is in practice. Football coaches, most of them are old school, and you know, if given their druthers, you would hit every single day in practice, you know, to try to, all right, emulate, you know, what's going to go on Sunday.
Well,
and,
hey,
of course,
Keith,
that takes a...
Along those lines...
Yeah, go ahead.
If I can interject just a question.
Oh,
with
please.
Regard to training one, you know, what is being taught? You know, who has the manual to say, this is how we're going to train you to tackle? We're going to train you. No doubt there is some kind of a manual that they use, no doubt, for training, do they not?
Actually, there is. I don't believe a manual exists. There are a bunch of rules, all right? And when these rules were first handed down, not only on the pro level, but college and scholastic as well, it was, you know, to me, you know, an ex-football player, I couldn't believe it. I was helping out with a local high school, you know, back in the 2000s at the time, and all of a sudden, all right, you're not, you know, linemen aren't supposed to lead with their head. Okay. Well, you know, you always lead with your head. You know, you want to put your head, you know, right under the face mask of that opponent, you know, and jar him, and then, you know, keep your feet moving and knock him off the line. That's your job, whether it's a linebacker or a lineman.
Is that targeting? What's the name for that?
There is no name. Again, that's why there's these vague rules. Again, you're not supposed to lead with your head now. And again, this isn't so much a rule as what the NFL is preaching that should be taught. You know, you're not, as a lineman, supposed to lead with your head. And again, when, you know, even at the high school level, I was like, how are we going to teach this? All right.
If you don't lead with your head, what is the technique then to go ahead and interact with your opponent? You know, what are
The whole thing now is that they're teaching that you're supposed to put the head to the side, okay? You know, you're not supposed to contact your head to the opponent's helmet, all right? Or even to their, you know, to their shoulder pad. You know, you're supposed to, you know, try to turn and, you know, hit shoulder pad to shoulder pad. And that's actually... You know, that's actually in the rules, you know, again, on how that's taught, but it's not enforced, but it is, you know, as far as, you know, the so-called skilled players, you know, who again are, you know, they have more distance between them. They're traveling at a faster speed. Again, that is being enforced. And again, targeting specifically is, you know, leading with your head into the head of another player. And that's supposedly illegal wherever you are on the field.
Wonderful. A beautiful explanation. And, you know, Keith, you bring up, you know, several issues along with this. Equipment. You know, what equipment are these guys playing with today? You know, I know we have helmets. We have face guards, correct? We wear the dental appliances, shoulder pads, hip pads. You know, all that. What's the equipment today? What's standard wear here? for the NFL?
This might surprise some people, but, you know, you'd think that, you know, an NFL player, you know, how violent a game it is, you're going to put as many pads as possible on, and exactly the opposite is true, okay? No matter what position you play, you want to be more fleet of foot. You want to have your arms free. You want to be able to run faster or get off the ball, you know, a little quicker. I mean, that helps you as a player. And of course, you know, that's what everyone does. So instead of, you know, padding up like you'd think they would, everybody pads down. And every NFL player, you know, who's in a hitting position, you know, they have customized that helmet. And again, the helmet has evolved over the years, right?
Sure.
From leather helmet with no face masks. By the way, the face mask probably was the worst thing to do as far as head trauma goes, putting that face mask on the helmet, because now, you know, there's more leverage, you know, and again, if you have a face mask on, you're more likely to lead with your head as well. So it was the worst thing that they could do as far as head trauma goes. But, of course, they're not going to take that away now.
Not at all. And, Keith, with regard to, say,
We lost him for a minute, Keith, as we get him back in here.
Yeah.
Man, what an interesting show here. A lot of people are coming through, and I've got some questions as we wait for him. Joe from Bucks County, Pennsylvania, chiming in, basically says, if we look at this sport, which it is now, the NFL, where is this sport going to be 20 years from now? Is it going to be a flag football league? Because it seems like to me that they're not doing anything to do anything for the players health-wise as far as preparing them with the concussions. Oh, great question out of Bucks County, PA.
That is a great question. Shout out to Bucks County, Doylestown, you know, right around where I grew up, you know, up in Lehigh County, Pennsylvania. Mark, that is a great question. And I saw some alarming statistics recently about youth participation in football, and also parents, you know, what they're going to encourage their kids, what sports they're going to encourage their kids to play. And, you know, the gravitational pull away from football and towards soccer is just amazing. And, you know, again, per your point, you got to wonder about the future of football because, you know, the pool of players seems, you know, potential players seems to get smaller and smaller. You know, I imagine there'll always be people there, you know, with the multi-million dollars that, you know, you can make. There'll always be people ready to fill those voids. But, you know, certainly the quality of the game could suffer.
Yeah. Another question, Doc, as you're back. Chris from Wheeland, West Virginia, he's heard, you know, Keith on the Philadelphia show, keep up the good work. All these books, is there one in particular that you like, and how hard is it to write a book? Enjoying the show, Chris, he says.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right, thanks, Chris. Hey, Doc is back.
I'm back. Yeah. Technical area here in the studio. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, Mark, just to answer your question and the caller's question, lately I'm hawking my book, The Bus List, Essential Estate Planning. Okay. And, you know, how do you buy that book? Go to thebuslist.com. I call it The Bus List because, you know, what happens if you, you know, a healthy individual, you know, maybe younger in age, you get run over by a bus. All right. It could be.
Wow.
You know, again, now you have even more stress on your loved ones. You know, you just died. It's a good thing to have your essential estate planning taken care of, and that's what the bus list does. It prompts you to go ahead and write your own bus list so that you have your essential estate planning taken care of. So, again, go to thebuslist.com, available in paperback as well as ebook.
And, you know,
yeah, one more I'll take. I'll tell you one more. Give it back to you. Albert from Poway, a live listener all the time, listening to the show. He says, How are you guys getting along, Penn State and Pitt? I remember the battles in the 70s.
Yeah.
Well,
hey, that's
know,
also
like
a great
a lot,
question.
But I hate Penn State from Pitt. Go ahead.
Hey, absolutely. That used to, people go, young people, of course, wouldn't know this, but Pitt and Penn State used to have a rivalry that was akin to Michigan, Ohio State, or
yes.
Auburn, Alabama. And it was ended abruptly, again, from what I've heard, because of a slight that Joe Paterno received. From the Pittsburgh
yes.
coach. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but that's the rumor. But again, it ended one of the best rivalries. And again, I know Pittsburgh fans don't like Penn State and vice versa. But that's, in sports, that's okay. And it's a shame that tremendous rivalry isn't what it used to be.
Ended. Yes. No, very good question. Do you have another one for us, Mark?
Got the regulars out there. Gail from, Florida says, guys,
Clearwater.
Keep going on with the show. I learned so much from you, Doc, each and every week. And now with Keith Dorney, I'll just make sure my grandkids don't play football till they get better helmets.
Well, we want everyone to be safe. Keith, along with these comments, you're doing very well. You're writing. Good thinking. One of the sequelae that we've researched with NFL players, they have one of the highest rate of professional athlete dementia in retirement. Does that sound right
yes.
to you?
Absolutely. I mean, I live it every day. I mean, going up to an old coach at a reunion and saying, Don, how's it going, man? And, his wife shaking her head, going, hey,
sure.
Don hasn't been with us mentally for a couple of years now. He's not going to remember you, even though I spent,
wow.
A good 8 years with him. I see this all the time, and, it's not just, ALS, dementia.
Sure.
It's other diseases as well. And yeah, hey, playing the game like that at that high level, you can't think that it doesn't take a toll on you. And, me personally, I've had 3 joint replacements, both of my knees and my right shoulder. As far as my
yes.
My gray matter goes, thank God, the heavens that,
yes.
I'm still cognizant. And again, I'm still relatively young, 65, I'm hoping that lasts. But, I know that, the odds are that, maybe it won't, and it scares the hell out of me. Trust me.
Got it. Would you mind if I ask you a personal financial question?
Oh, not at all.
As far as with your NFL playing days, and again, maybe in general, the pension, the money, do most NFL retirees, can they live well later in life with their NFL pension, or do they need to look into other aspects, for financial compensation?
It's a great question, Doc. If you played post 1993 in the NFL and you played at least, it's 3 years now, it used to be 4 years, and you become vested, you're pretty much set for life. As long as you're
sure.
at least decently responsible with the millions that you're going to be making. Unfortunately, for the pre-93ers, those that, that played before that time,
sure.
it's just not the same. There's no lifetime health care. People are, just aghast when I tell them, I'm having trouble getting health insurance. I'm in Medicare
yes.
now, but up until a few months ago, I wasn't. And they said, well, what are you talking about? You played NFL all these years.
Right.
Well, only post 93ers are covered. Now, my pension, was good for a case of beer, per month.
Okay.
10 yeah. years ago. Okay. It was just paltry, even though I played 9 seasons. Now, the last 2 collective bargaining agreements, they've bumped that amount up a little bit. So now it's at a decent amount, and maybe a little bit more than your Social Security, but not much. And again, if you play, you know, 3-4 years, I mean, you have this huge, you know, besides, you know, medical for life,
yeah.
You know, you have an HRA account that, you know, you can take money from for your out-of-pocket expenses, you know, and all these other benefits. But again, the pre-93ers, I think they're pretty much just waiting for us all to die, you know, so
wow.
You know,
yes,
they don't have to shell out that extra money. So, you know, for me, you know, I'm getting by just fine. But I think the people that really, you know, I played in the 70s and 80s, you know, the people that, you know, were back in the 50s and 60s and before, those are the guys that really, you know, took it on the chin because, you know, there were no restrictions back then whatsoever. And they're probably the most messed up of all of us.
Vulnerable. Well, you know, you hear stories about, you know, maybe famous athletes selling their Super Bowl rings, you know, things like that. Because they're in dire straits financially. You know, with regard to the NFL, just a look at that, did they help do financial education for their players? Was that part of what they did for you? Or did one have to go out and get their own education on what to do with these tremendous salaries that, you know, some of these players have made?
Well, that's another inroad that the NFL has made. Back when I played, there was basically nothing. You know, now I know there's financial services available. You know, they've hired several companies, you know, to help the players with their money. But the bottom line is, it, you know, it's the lottery syndrome, right? You know, you look at, you know, the percentage of lottery winners that end up penniless. You know, the percentage is, you know, double digit amazing, really.
Yes,
and I think the same thing can be said for NFL football players. Hey, you know, you come from a poor, you know, background, and all of a sudden you have millions and millions of dollars. Of course, you know, no matter how much help you're offered, you know, you're probably not going to be as good with that money as, you know, someone who grew up differently. So I think that's still a major problem.
And, you know, Keith, with regard to your history and the books you have been writing, are there financial educations in these books? Are there
absolutely. You know, I have again, as I said, I'm writing my seventh book right now. I talked about the bus list. I have this series of books, the best money management books. There's a book on Roth options, Roth IRAs, and Roth options, you know, if you have one at work, all right, which again, you know, you need to have that as part of your financial plan, you know, as well as more traditional contributions. You have to reduce your debt, especially your high interest debt. You know, I have a book called Best Debt Elimination Plan. And then my latest book, Best Stock Investing Plan, also available, a comprehensive guide of how basically you can invest in the stock market yourself. You know, with minimal cost, minimal effort, and do as good as the big guys at Wall Street. In fact, you'll do much better.
Well, having said all that, Keith, where did you get the education to be able to go and educate people with your book writing? What did you have to do to acquire that knowledge, or did you always have it?
Well, you know, I've always been a you know, again, our listeners in Pennsylvania can relate to this, a thrifty Pennsylvania Dutchman. You know, my parents were thrifty Pennsylvania Dutchmen and Dutch, you know, woman. And, you know, so that was kind of indoctrinated into me. So I've always been, you know, good with a dollar. You know, I was a business major at Penn State. You know, even though football took a lot of my time, I went to class. You know, I got a first rate education. Almost said first grade education. That would be incorrect.
Okay, but we understand the first grade, absolutely.
I went ahead and got my master's in teaching, all right, and taught it at many different levels. I started off teaching, you know, emotionally disturbed kids that were basically on parole from, from the juvie board. Was another job, and I also taught in high school for 4 years, and then went on to teach at basically big tech companies, teaching rich people how to get richer. So, in between there, I got my certified financial planning, certificate status. I know a lot about money.
Yes.
And, a lot about, helping yourself, not only monetarily,
really,
but also, taking care of your body, and trying to live a happy
planning.
Existence as well as estate planning, correct.
You know, you as a combative athlete, you were there in the trenches. You wanted to win. Is that the same philosophy you have in your books about having your readers win at the game of money and life?
I think so, yeah. What's your definition of winning? I think a lot of people don't know what winning looks like. To me, winning, is enjoying, every moment that you have. Here it's a Saturday morning, you should be looking forward to, your activities the rest of the day. And again, love, should be in your heart rather than hate. And try to see the best in people, again, some of their shortcomings, look past those shortcomings and live a healthy, happy lifestyle, that encourages, you also taking care of that body of yours, That's especially important when you get older, and especially important, for folks like me who have been traumatized, physically.
Yes, and just so our listeners know, Keith, I believe you are 6'5". You were about 300 pounds when you were playing?
Correct.
Yeah. So you're a big man. Just kind of reflecting on, you mentioned when you were playing, and, you're hitting defensive players. They had to be very fearful of a giant like you on the offensive line, didn't they?
Well, yeah. I think I was 310 pounds when I left the game. So that was pretty big back then. One of the other guys that were bigger than me, famously the Refrigerator Perry, right?
Oh yeah.
Famously. a lot of big guys. And unfortunately, a lot of NFL players, they don't go my route. I went ahead and lost 75 pounds. I'm about 225 right now. Which is a healthy weight for me. A lot of guys go the other way, and they're 350 plus. And of course, you need to maintain a healthy body weight. And a lot of times, a healthy body weight, may not be, what Barbie looks like. All right. Or a male model you see in a TV commercial, a healthy weight can have a little paunch and stuff. It's what the numbers say, as far as, your health goes.
And your things like we call basal metabolism, the basal with BMI, our basic metabolic, and, you need to look at that. Super. I'm just wondering, Mark, do you have any questions for us?
I got some questions, and I got Matt in the green room ready to go, but let me bring in Tyler from Bellevue, Washington. He said, can Keith help me with the stock market? I've lost a lot of money with the crypto stuff. And did you ever play in Seattle? Because I think we have the best cheerleaders out here, the Seagals.
Hey, let me tell you, man. I remember vividly my rookie year in the NFL. Again, I grew up in Macungie, Pennsylvania, right in the Allegheny Mountains. Didn't do a lot of traveling. Went to Penn State, and I was drafted by Detroit. I had to look on a map to see where the heck it was. And I'll never forget our third preseason game. We're playing the Seattle Seahawks, and we're flying over the Cascade Mountains. This is in late August, and there's a huge amount of snow on the top of the mountains. I'm like, where in the hell are we? So I actually love the state of Washington. My daughter and her husband were stationed up there. Several different places, Bellingham, all right, as well as Seattle. I work a lot at Microsoft, so I actually, have a lot of respect for the state of Washington. Hey, listen, I'm sorry you lost a lot of money in crypto. Crypto is an extremely volatile investment. And when you invest in volatile investments, you know, you have to use risk management strategies. And all of this is explained in my book, Best Stock Investing Plan, available at Amazon, both ebook as well as paperback. It's a rather lengthy book. You don't have to read the whole thing. You know, it's maybe you want to read about your Roth options at work or a Roth IRA or specifically how to get out of debt. It's got a lot of information in it. But I recommend you getting that book and reading it, and I think that will give you your chance of being successful in the stock market. The thing about the stock market is it's down 30% of the time historically. And right now we're in one of those times. And, you know, now's a great time to invest in stock because so far anyway, all right, we've always eclipsed our previous lows. And, you know, if that doesn't happen, we're probably going to have bigger problems than worrying about money. So I'm still a fan of stocks, but only if you invest, all right, with a plan.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'd like to bring on Dr. Matt Varicella, a concussion expert. Matt,
wow.
Good morning.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for coming on the show.
Absolutely.
Matt, we've had, you know, you're a friend of the show. We've had you on before talking about concussions. And, you know, we've had, of course, Keith Thorney this morning, retired NFL, with a lot of excellent information. I don't know if you were able to hear the show yet, you know, this morning.
I was.
You know.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, yeah, I was tuning in. Very interesting show, as always. Thanks again for having me on. You know, Keith, it's an honor to get the chance to spend some time on the air with you, and I'm looking forward to getting some additional insight on these type of topics from your very unique perspective. Kind of interesting just listening to this as the show evolved. It went more NFL-based concussion, and then it kind of delved into the financial sector. So I don't know which part. I have a couple questions. It'd just be interesting to get your insight on some of these things.
Well, you know what, Matt?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'll give you the floor. Go ahead. Go ahead, Matt.
Right. So, yeah, just real quick, some background on me. I'm an orthopedic surgeon at Penn Highlands Healthcare. It's a healthcare system that spans across central and western Pennsylvania. I'm the director of orthopedic robotic surgery, and I take care of a lot of college and high school athletes, NCAA Division I, II athletics. One of my kind of major interests and areas for my practice is actually the athlete's ability to handle adversity and the psychological impact of all these injuries. And I think concussions are a huge challenge because the brain itself gets injured and needs to recover. Plus, you add on the psychological component of being injured and or sidelined from competition. So, Keith, I wanted to ask you, I know you had several concussions, and obviously at that time there was no formal protocol. Did you yourself do anything differently, or what was your mindset as you went through these repeated injuries, episodes, coming back? Did you get discouraged? How did you handle those psychological hurdles?
Well, you know, I think, you know, early on when, great question, Doc. You know, early on, you know, I think my first concussion, major concussion, was when I was a sophomore in high school, playing high school football. And I was, you know, taken away in an ambulance and really didn't remember anything until, you know, midway through the ambulance ride to the hospital. I came back. I remember I came back to the film room, you know, kind of tentatively, you know, at school the next day, you know, thinking that, you know, guys were going to make fun of me. But it was the complete opposite. You know, people were looking at me differently. They were looking at me as a football player because, you know, I got a concussion, but I also knocked the heck out of the opponent's running back and stopped them on fourth and short at the goal line, and we won the game. People were looking at me differently. I'm saying this because, not to say how great of a high school football player I was.
No, I
really wasn't. But just how that perception, you know, it's the opposite you would think. You'd think I'd be discouraged, but I was actually, you know, more motivated than I ever was. And, by the time, you know, I received my last concussion in my last year in the NFL against the Chicago Bears. I mean, it was just part of the game. It was just part of being a veteran. And, you know, of course, you wanted to get over that concussion as quickly as you could, you know, and get back in the game because that was your job. So, yeah, you know, that was my mindset. You know, certainly I feel a lot different about concussions now, you know, from my perspective, you know, and that's why it's so important that these concussion protocols are being put in place and taking, you know, any decision the player is going to make out of the equation. Because again, when you have a concussion, you know, you're not thinking very clearly.
You're right. Yeah. And can we interrupt if I can? You know, Keith, with regard to your ongoing health care, you know, do you, again, you've written books about many topics. With regard to health care maintenance, do you practice that? You know, are you seeing your family physician or your neurologist, you know, on a regular basis? Or do you try to go ahead and maintain your health care with your own beingness and your own knowledge?
Well, I think that, you know, certainly, you know, wellness, you know, self-care is very, very important. You can't rely, all right, on the medical profession to do everything for you, okay? But certainly, you know, getting your numbers checked, you know, for, you know, all the, you know, cholesterol and all that stuff. And yeah, you know, as you get older, you know, doing the things that are recommended. No, I'm all on board. You know, I get all the tests that you know, are recommended to me. And I think that's important, especially as an older adult, since, you know, you're obviously going to have a lot more wrong with you as you get older.
Sure. Things wear out.
Sure.
So, you know, as far as, may I just finish this, you know, with regard to a message to our listeners, we want to let them know that, you know, yes, we need good health care, but on the other hand, we also need to maintain it, to have ourselves checked, to keep ourselves on the right road, to keep our longevity, you know, a good possibility, and to maintain the quality of our life so we're able to do the things we want to do. And, I mean, that, I think that's the takeaway point here. You know, you were a superstar athlete. You did have some complications with injury, but yet you're still taking care of yourself, maintaining your health to give you the opportunities to do the great things that you're doing. So, no, I thank you for that. Matt, do you have another question?
Well, yeah, you know, a couple here. I did want to get your take on the Guardian cap. Obviously, we know some of the data and science behind it in terms of the force reduction and wearing it. It seems like, you know, the 2022 NFL preseason was kind of that first time it was mandated. Do you see this as something that's going to stick long term?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, define that, Matt, if you would, for our audience, please.
Yeah, so the Guardian cap, it came out. It's a soft shell that is worn over the actual helmet itself, and they had done some laboratory studies in terms of the force reduction. If one player wears it and sustains a impact or a blow to the head, there's a 10% reduction. It actually, if both players are wearing it, there's a 20% reduction. And there was I can't remember how long the mandated period was, but it was at least for a couple games in the 2022 NFL preseason. And then they looked at the performance across that. It's a relatively small sample size, obviously, but they did see a 50% reduction in the number of concussions during that period when they compared it to the historical numbers that were happening 2018, 2019, 2021. And some of the NFL coaches, I know Mike Tomlin got on board with that, and he kind of advocated for it. And several hundred players were actually wearing the Guardian cap out after the mandated period expired. So it seems like there might be some traction getting on that perspective. I don't know if you put yourself like, oh, if I'm playing in the NFL today, is that something you would see yourself potentially buying into?
Yeah, I think that it's important that the NFL, you know, continues, you know, these studies you know, it's the you know, with the age of metrics, you know, big data, I think that's certainly helping, you know, with concussions. And I think that research just needs to continue. Once again, though, going back to the equipment issues that I talked about earlier, you know, a lot of players may feel burdened by, you know, that extra cone on top of their head and, and may not want to play with it because, you know, because, again, it's hurting their performance on the field. To me, that would be, you know, the only detriment, and that's why, again, just like with concussion protocol, I think you need to take the decision away from the players a lot of times because by the time you get to the pro level, your mind is poisoned, as far as, trying to maintain good health. I mean, you just want to be the best player possible. I think that's a lot of players' mindsets.
Yeah, I don't think I've had one time where I've been holding somebody out on the sidelines during, say, a college football game. There has not been one time that the athlete said, no, I'm okay sitting out. I mean, they are
sure,
always
no, right.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And
right.
So you've got to make that call.
Oh, absolutely.
And, I think another show down the road where I've had a lot of interest is with regard to having athletes get back in the game. How do you make that decision? And that's a big topic. I think it's not for today, but maybe we can discuss that again. Once the protocol for concussion has been started, what are the decision-making metrics to have an athlete return to the game? Does that make sense to you, Keith?
Oh, yeah. I'm not sure what that protocol, specifically is, but I do know that, it's quite, it's a lengthy process. I know I just read in the paper this morning that, speaking of Tua earlier, he was elected to the Pro Bowl, which is now a flag football game, and he still hasn't passed his concussion protocol, so he can't play in the game. So, obviously, that would be a good thing to delve into that subject, find out a little bit more about it, and share with our listeners.
With Barrett. And Dr. Varicella, what are your thoughts about having maybe another discussion on how do we get people back in the game?
Oh, absolutely. I think that everything in medicine, it's the more standardized you can get, standardized efficiency, help improve outcomes, I think the more we get to that point, the better off we will be. You see that in essentially all walks of life, but certainly medicine. Part of the issue with concussions and return to play has been the lack of standardization. It's this big nebulous kind of ambiguity surrounding, like, how does the athlete feel? Are they able to return? And it's just more of a subjective, a feel type of situation.
Sure.
Do I have time for one more question here for Keith?
Go ahead. We're going to wrap up shortly. Give us one more, please.
Well, and this comes up, certainly with the future of football. I don't think it's ever going to head to the flag football situation, but what advice would you give parents that are on the fence if they're going to let their kid play youth football, middle school, high school football? I'm sure you've had these conversations with people over the years, but is there any kind of pearl or insight you give to them regarding their concerns and, holding the kids out, not letting them play?
Well, the thing is that football is a great game, and again, growing up in Eastern Pennsylvania, where football is definitely king, I may be a little bit brainwashed, all right. But football is a great game. It's fun. It teaches, players. Again, you don't have to play, in the NFL to have advantages because you played the game. I know, high school football is a great teacher, as far as teamwork goes, as far as working as one. So, it's a great game and it's fun to play, and the camaraderie and the great times that I remember, a lot of them are, related to football. So, hey, be careful. I think, flag football, up until that brain is developed a bit, 12,
yes,
13, 14 years old before you strap the pads on. I think that there needs to be more oversight you know, on the, you know, scholastic level as well as the peewee level. You know, a lot of times, you know, these are just, you know, parents helping out, and they don't know any better. They don't know any better, you know, as far as, you know, protecting the athletes. So I'd like to see a little bit more oversight, you know, on those earlier, you know, age programs. And, you know, as far, and, you know, hey, you know, make sure that neck is strong. All right. If your kid's going to play football, you know, there are lots of ways to have a strong neck, which is going to help protect the head. Because, you know, head injuries, you know, kind of inevitable as far as the game goes, you know, even though, as pointed out by, you know, by one of our listeners, you know, the game has gotten a little bit soft, you know, back to what it used to be.
Yeah. Super. Mark Mancini in L.A., what do you have to wrap this up? Do you have another question?
Well, I'll throw two quick ones because we're down to 4 minutes and unbelievable with the listeners. But Jack from Columbus, Ohio, chiming in, and he says basically with inflation going across the country, guys, I don't know if you're aware of it, a lot of people are dropping their medical insurance. That's why this show is so great to listen to each and every week. Thank you very much for putting this on a platform that I can enjoy and my friends in Columbus, Ohio.
Well, thank you so much for that comment. We appreciate that. That's what we'd like to do for our audience. Thank you.
And the other one is Chris from Denver, Colorado says, Keith, have you ever had a DeMar Hamlin type of an injury playing in college or in the NFL? That had to be scary watching that. And if you didn't, you had to think to yourself, thank God.
Yeah, absolutely, Chris. You know, luckily I've never experienced anything like that personally. I know, you know, when I first, you know, came into the league, our trainer at the Detroit Lions, Kent Faulb, you know, told me how a player for the Detroit Lions, Chuck Hughes, died in his arms. You know, basically, you know, the same thing that, you know, that Hamlin suffered. And then shortly after I retired, the right guard, the guy's name is eluding me right now, but, you know, he was paralyzed and still is paralyzed. So, you know, it's a very, very dangerous game. And, you know, I think that, you know, it's a great game that we can continue to play. You know, and I think these safety protocols, even though it may take away from, you know, people's viewing pleasures, you know, at least a bit, you know, I think are important to, you know, to protect the participants.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Dr. Varicella, do you want to wrap it up? Do you have anything else to say?
No, we're good. Keith, I really appreciate you answering those questions and sharing your story and your valuable insight. I think, you know, everybody learned a lot, myself included.
Well, Doc, listen, you know, I appreciate your expertise as well. And again, nice meeting you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank
Likewise.
You. And, you know, Keith, again, thank you for being on. You know, you're a friend of our show. Excellent information. I haven't bought your books yet. I'm going to start to look and see what you have. I'd love the insights of philosophy.
Thank you.
So you're going to sell some more books. Dr. Varicella, thank you for Saturday morning sharing your expertise. And then we'll go
Absolutely.
Back to LA with Mark Mancini, and we'll wrap this up till next week.
Well, and let me get it out there in case anybody wants to get a hold of these guys. And Ralph Williams out there in Pittsburgh says nobody should drop their insurance. He's absolutely correct. But, Keith, if anybody wanted to get a hold of you, how would they get a hold of you? Because you're just such a great guest coming across the board in all these great shows, especially here in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, if you want to contact me personally, just email me at keithdorney@outlook.com.
Beautiful.
And Matt?
And Dr. Varicella?
Yeah, so matthew.varicello@gmail.com. That'd probably be the easiest way. And then website matthewvaricellomd.com. I'm also on social media, too, if you just search my name. And you can certainly contact me through any of those platforms. I'd be happy to get back to you.
Thank you.
And Doc, in Pittsburgh, for you with your great staff there and everything in the greater general area of the burg.
Yes, sir. Well, again, I get tons of emails. And, you know, again, our staff tries to get back to everybody. It's GJRMD308@outlook.com. And you know, Mark, next Saturday, we've got a COO, a chief operating officer for a Western Pennsylvania healthcare system, talking about how the healthcare system determines access for their patients. What services are they putting out there? How do they want to help their patient population? So we're going to hear it from the administrative side to see what they look at. You know, is it a dollar issue? Is it really being the health of that system? So it should be a very interesting show. Our COO is Mark Norman. He'll be on. So it should be a really a great, interesting show. So thank you very much.
Yeah. Looking forward to it. For Keith Thorney, Matthew Vaccaro, and Dr. Greg Roscoe, yours truly, Mark Mancini, saying stay tuned at the top of the hour for the show out of Oakland. But catch this show and tell all your friends on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. Till next week, have a blessed and safe weekend, guys, and thanks for tuning in.
Thank you all very much.